This is Fresh Air. How can we tell if recovered memories are true? These are said to be repressed memories about traumatic events like incest that surface later in life, usually while in therapy. A court case challenging the legitimacy of recovered memory is now underway in the Napa Valley. Another case involving recovered memory is the subject of the book Remembering Satan by journalist Lawrence Wright. He reports on the case of Paul Ingram, a deputy sheriff and Republican Party county chairman in Olympia, Washington. One of Ingram's daughters accused him of sexually abusing her when she was young. Later, his other daughter made a similar accusation of early childhood abuse. Ingram denied the charges, later had recovered memories of the abuse, but ultimately came to believe his recovered memories were false. It all started for him shortly after he arrived at his office the morning of November 28, 1988.
He was interrogated by his colleagues in the Thurston County Sheriff's Department and told of the accusations. And his response was, "Well, my daughters wouldn't lie, but I don't remember doing this." And those are the axes of which the case is made, because he believed there must be some truth in the allegation. But he also believed, he'd been trained to believe, that he could block out such events, repress those memories himself, and then maybe recover them and find some truth to them. He said perhaps that there was a dark side to him that he didn't know about. I think it's relevant to know also that this was a family of fundamentalist Christians who were predisposed to believe that the devil might be operating in them.
In fact, his family later accused him of participating in satanic ritual abuse. What specifically did they say he did?
Well, actually, Terry, he started that. It was during the interrogations. He was not only interrogated by his colleagues in the sheriff's department, but by a psychologist who put him into a trance, and by his pastor in this fundamentalist church. All four of these people were in the same room interrogating him and pressuring him to remember things and telling him that if he would confess to these events, he would remember them. And in that atmosphere and in a trance, he began to experimentally confess to whatever they suggested. And the psychologist, Richard Peterson, offered the suggestion that there might be something satanic about these events. And soon Paul Ingram began to incorporate that suggestion into his confessions and began to remember tombstones and witches' costumes. And by the time this whole case collapsed on itself, there were renting helicopters and flying over the county with night viewing equipment, searching for fires of satanic ceremonies, and the entire department had been accused of being Satanists, and every official in the county. The whole thing just turned into a tremendous fiasco.
I'm interested in something that his pastor said to him. His pastor said that God wouldn't allow thoughts other than those which were true to come into his memory.
Well, that's not an uncommon assumption. There are a lot of, some cases, therapists, others religious counselors who believe that whatever pops into your mind must be a true memory, or the doorway to deeper memories that you're hiding from yourself.
So that if Ingram had a thought that might very well be a fantasy, he was encouraged, or daydream, he was encouraged to think of that as a memory?
Indeed. In fact, the psychologist would tell him, for instance, that the explanation for your behavior is probably that you yourself were abused, perhaps by your father or an uncle. And he said that to him in the morning, and by afternoon, Ingram had remembered those very events.
This is a very interesting predicament for the police, I think. I mean, they accepted a confession by somebody who initially didn't remember doing anything that he later confessed to.
Right.
So what were some of the issues for the police and for the legal system about how to handle a confession by somebody who remembered this after the fact?
Well, first of all, was there any evidence of it? The maddening thing from the point of view of the investigators is that the witnesses, the two daughters in this case, and the father were all remembering different things. The girls had been roommates for most of their lives in bunk beds, one above the other. And the memories they would have of abuse, not only by their father, but eventually by their mother, by other members of the police force, by other members of the community. They would remember people coming into the room and having sex with them or abusing them physically, cutting them, scarring them, and so forth. But the other sister was always asleep or unconscious or absent in this. There was never a moment where they witnessed it happening to the other daughter, nor was there a time when Paul Ingram's memory concurred with what the daughters were remembering.
Although Paul Ingram confessed to satanic ritual abuse and confessed to abusing his family, he later withdrew the confession, deciding that these were false memories he was having.
Right.
What was he able to? Was he legally able to withdraw the confession?
No, the judge refused his plea. An interesting thing precipitated that discovery on his part. The police, because they were so confounded by this whole case, they brought in a well-known cult investigator named Richard Offshee, who's a social psychologist at the University of California, Berkeley. And he's deprogrammed many cult members. And he came into this a little suspicious that because, you know, satanic ritual abuse is a widely heard phenomenon, but there's simply no evidence of this international satanic conspiracy that people have been talking about so much. So he decided to perform a little experiment on Paul Ingram to see if he could create a false memory and how much pressure would it take to do so. So he told Paul about an incident that he knew had not happened, which was a scene in which he had orchestrated sex between one of his daughters and one of his sons. And Ingram said he couldn't remember it. And Offshee told him, "But this did happen. Both of your children told me it did, which is not true. And so we know that it must have happened." And so Paul got quiet and he said, "I'm beginning to see Erica and Paul Jr." And Offshee said, "Don't say any more. You know, what do you normally do?" "I go to my cell and pray over it," he says. So do that, and I'll talk to you tomorrow." And the next day, more of these memories had come, and Offshee sent him back to the cell. The third day, he had written a 3-page account of the entire event that never happened, complete with dialogue and scenes of an event that had actually never occurred. So Offshee, at that point, tried to dissuade him and say, "You know, this is not true. I made this up just to see what would happen." And Ingram refused to believe it. It was only later, when he was put in prison and away from the reinforcement of the psychologist, the police officers, and his pastor, that he began to realize that these memories didn't have the same quality of reality of real memories. And that's when he realized that he had fantasized the whole thing.
But it was too late.
It was too late. He's in jail until the year 2001.
My guest is journalist Lawrence Wright, author of the new book Remembering Satan. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Lawrence Wright, the author of the new book Remembering Satan, A Case of Recovered Memory and the Shattering of an American Family. The case that you write about in your new book raises a lot of questions about the nature of memory, the nature of recovered memory, human suggestibility, and possibly hysteria. Do you think that there was an element of hysteria in this case, of people?
Yeah, there was certainly. I mean, I think the hysteria arose from a number of different things that were occurring around 1988. There was the McMartin Daycare Center, in which satanic abuse was alleged, and there was a lot of anxiety in the country about missing children who turned out not to be missing. Then there was a book called The Courage to Heal, which is written by Ellen Bass and Laura Davis, who are a short story writer and a poet, not trained psychologists, but in that book they articulate many of the principles of the recovered memory movement, which is that memory of entire events can be completely forgotten and recovered in therapy, and that if you think you were abused that you probably were. And they also suggested that people sue their parents as a therapeutic recourse. And then there was the Geraldo Rivera special, The Devil Workshop, Exposing Satan's Underground, which aired on October 25th of 1988, and the entire Ingram family sat around and watched it. Now, these events, coupled with the rise of religious fundamentalism and this kind of victim culture that has been sponsored by both the men's movement and the women's movement, and certain romantic notions of therapy that suggest that people's complex behavior and problems in later life can be solved by discovering a single act of abuse in childhood and remembered and therefore cured. All of these things were in the air at the time the Ingram case emerged.
What's happening in the legal system now is the legal system tries to figure out what memories that happen later in life, you know, that surface later in life are real memories, mm-hmm. and which of those are just the result of human suggestibility.
Well, there's unfortunately a train wreck in the courts of suits concerning recovered memories. It began by having people who had been in therapy be encouraged to sue their parents, and they perhaps would be their grandparents, their next door neighbors, and so on, for abuse that happened years before. In many cases, in fact, in more than 25 states, the laws have been changed to accommodate such suits so that the statute of limitations clock doesn't start until the memories return. So you'll have such an event as you did in Minneapolis last year, where a 60-year-old woman sued her 91-year-old father for abuse that supposedly happened 57 years ago. Now the pendulum seems to be swinging the other way. A number of people who had such memories in therapy are recanting and suing their therapists for implanting those memories. Plus, there's a very interesting case going on in California right now. A man named Gary Ramona is suing his daughter's therapist for memories he believes that were implanted in therapy. And his daughter is testifying for the therapist because she still believes in them. So right now, the courts are unfortunately where this issue is going to be resolved. They're poorly equipped to do it, but there's no other recourse.
In the case of Paul Ingram, it was your observation that his recovered memories were shaped in part by his belief system and his belief in Satan, but also by pop culture and by tabloid TV. Mm-hmm. How do you think those memories were shaped by his belief system and also by pop culture?
Well, he had been a Catholic who converted to a fundamentalist church, and I do think that he had been primed to believe that the devil was real and perhaps operating in his own mind, blocking those memories. And in fact, he was actually exorcised in jail by his pastor. I think the culture was awash, still is, in these images of Satanism and in these popular understandings of memory, that things just get blocked out. And it's almost like a literary conceit, the way amnesia was in the 40s with Spellbound and all those great Hitchcock movies where people would live lives and then completely forget who they were and wander off into some new identity. Very much the same way we now look at recovered memories and think that every happy life hides some traumatic, forgotten memory.
In your introduction to your previous book, Saints and Sinners, you wrote that many times in your career you've witnessed the transforming power of faith. Yet, you look upon a lot of believers with a mixture of both envy and pity. Explain the envy and pity.
Well, the envy is because I can see the power of belief in people's lives, even when it's misdirected. You can see mass political movements and amazing transformations on society for good or bad that, you know, if you take it out of the context of religious belief, that they can have. So I envy that power, and I envy the sense of being right, of being correct in your choices about life. And at the same time, I pity the limitations that people impose on themselves by rigid beliefs, either political or religious in nature. And I think a lot of damage is done. Oftentimes, and this is especially true, I think, right now in this recovered memory movement, by people who are good-hearted, whose intentions are fine, who just want to help people. And in this heroic state of mind, they do, unfortunately, a lot of damage.
You are very skeptical of recovered memory. But what are your concerns about protecting the truths of people who have remembered that they were abused as children?
I think that we have to look at how those memories were recovered. If they were recovered under hypnosis or with some sort of drug use that encourages confabulation, then I think we have to be very skeptical about the reality of those memories, because research on hypnosis suggests that these memories are very likely to be inaccurate. I think that, secondly, let's think about how plausible is this story. If it involves being abducted by Martians, or if it involves satanic abuse where babies are murdered, well, it seems very implausible. So we have to be skeptical of those kinds of memories. And then finally, unfortunately, we're left with all these memories which are perfectly plausible, which may or may not have happened. And we don't know. If there's no corroboration, if there's no verification by other witnesses, it's hard to ever know whether they're real or not. And I, at that point, as a reporter, I throw up my hands, because who can tell?
Lawrence Wright, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Lawrence Wright is a staff writer for The New Yorker. His new book is called Remembering Satan. This is Fresh Air.